T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Tell me what they do well and what both doesn't do well, and then what advantage do you have with either of these guys?
You know, the main thing, especially in the modern NBA, is from Looney's side, is he can just get out on the perimeter. And if he gets switched, he can just kind of stay with guards. It's such a weird, it's like such a patient, almost slow approach out there that he has, but it's shown to be effective. He did it very well against the Rockets last year in the West Finals. He did it again in that game the other day in Houston. When they beat him, he just stays down on pump fakes. He can slide pretty well. He's obviously a lot younger than Bogut. And, you know, he's kind of a sharper, younger, smaller type center than Bogut in modern. Whereas Bogut, great box out guy, great screener. I mean, he had some wipeout screens the last couple games just to get KD open on like a curl for a jumper or step on like a back screen, you know, one of those cuts that they were using last night. Bogut's a better passer than Looney. You saw it last night. Bogut had a little slick behind the back pass to Curry, and some other maybe like dive cut type stuff, similar to Cousins. Cousins can really pass it, and he's just bigger. You know, that's the main thing. He just keeps people off the glass a lot better than Looney. Remember Looney just getting kind of pounded by Joel Embiid in that loss at home, where it wasn't anything Looney can do. He was just too small.
Anthony Slater from The Athletic joining us here on 95.7 The Game. The last few weeks, we continue to hear comments from the team about the pursuit of the one seed. Kerr and Klay Thompson talked about it after last night's game. We've heard it from Steph. We've heard it from KD. Why are we hearing so much about it? Are they truly that fixated on winning the one seed? Is this what they're using as their source of motivation to get through the rest of the regular season? Or do you think that series in Houston last year, where they had to win a game 7 on the road, kind of woke them up a little bit?
No, you know, I don't think it's – I think they're just trying to find motivation to keep themselves going because they know that's the only way they'll stay focused the last four games. Do I think they care that much about the one seed? Not really. I mean, look, inject some true sermon to this team and say, hey, do you think you can win a playoff game in Denver? Maybe, like, we can probably win, like, 4 playoff games in Denver. I don't think they're that worried about potentially having to go on the road. Number one, even going on the road in Denver, too. I mean, I don't know what your guys' thoughts are on the Nuggets, but I don't even think the Nuggets will probably make it to the West Finals. So, I'd be worried about them in a 1-4 potentially against a Houston or a Thunder or something like that. So, and even if they did, you know, Kevin Durant mentioned it last night. Maybe in a more honest take on the thing, he's like, "Look, we won Game 1 of the West Finals last year. It's not, you know, the one seed's not as important. It's just about playing good basketball and being healthy going into the playoffs." And, to me, that is the priority that could come with getting the one seed. I would honestly say a more important chase record-wise, if you look down the stretch, is if you looked across the conference. Right now, I think they're maybe tied in the loss column with Toronto, which could be a team they could see in the finals. That'd be a tougher series to me than Denver and Milwaukee, I think, a few games ahead of them right now. And that would probably be a tougher series than Denver.
Yeah, Toronto 21 losses, the Warriors 22 losses right now, and it's a half-game lead over the Denver Nuggets, and it's a sprint to the finish. So if I give you, with 12 games to go, I give you the choice of you take the Warriors or you take the field, where are you in this team? Because I think there was a time when they're in the 4-game losing streak, and you're like, oh, man, everyone's caught up to them, and then they had a couple of tough losses on the road, or the Christmas Day loss to the Lakers when LeBron got hurt, and you're starting to scratch your head and say, what is this team? But right now, do you take the field or do you take the Warriors?
I'd take the Warriors still, and it's just history based. I mean, we saw this last year. This time last year, they had 4 stars injured. Remember, KD broke his ribs, Klay Thompson broke his thumb, Steph was out with that really bad knee injury that made him miss all the way through into the second round, and then Draymond, I remember, got kneed at some point. He missed like 5 games, and they went 7-10 down the stretch. Their defense was really bad. Steve Kerr ripped them in Indianapolis badly, and Kevin Durant kind of responded to that. Then they lost the last game of the regular season by 40 to the Jazz, and it was like, uh-oh, this could be bad. Then they went into the playoffs, and they were by far the best defensive team in the playoffs. They only were challenged in that West Finals, and it was a challenge, but That was against the 67-win Houston team. I think Houston's taking a step back this year, even though I still think they're probably the biggest threat. So to me, easier path than last year through the West. I'd take them in the West. And then coming out of the East, yeah, I think, I mean, it's definitely better than the challenge that a kind of dying Cleveland team gave to them last year. But, it's still a new finals team. Whoever comes out of the East will be a very new finals team against, if you assume the Warriors are coming out of the West, a very veteran finals team that even if it is kind of their last run together, they should be motivated by that time. So it's tough not to pick the Warriors still.
Our Warriors insider from The Athletic, Anthony Slater, with us here on 95.7 The Game. Anthony, we always appreciate the time. We're glad you guys have traveled safe back to the Bay. Look forward to seeing you Thursday night against Indiana.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me.
He does a tremendous job. Tremendous job covering this team. I mean, must-read material coming off every single game. Now, while he was talking, I was also multitasking. We're going to do something new on this show. Something new. Rather than wild speculation, conjecture, hypotheticals, things we're really good at, the bread and butter of this fine program, I went through the last four playoff runs, the teams they played, and the total amount of games it took. Year one, 21 games to win a championship. Year two, 24 games to lose in game seven. Year three was only 17 games. Year four, 21 games. What's this year going to take? Look at the current state of the West. Look at the Eastern Conference. Is this route going to be more challenging? Is this route going to be less challenging? Is it going to require more games or fewer? Because right now you're looking at a matchup with the Clippers. Then you're going to get the winner of Portland-San Antonio. Then you're going to get either Houston, OKC, Denver, or Utah. Then the East. Let that marinate a bit because we like to bring you into the show. 888-957-9570. All of that is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
If I'd be out till quarter to three, would you...
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Honoring the Beatles today in light of Jim Cosmore's tremendous story about a time Paul McCartney ate dinner.
Right.
It was tremendous. I agree. I thought
Thank
it
you, Anna.
Was
tremendous.
I know you're being
Thank
sarcastic,
you,
but I'm going to say I agree because... Yes.
I am being sarcastic, but I'll give you an opportunity here. Did you really think that was a great story?
I actually enjoyed it.
Paul McCartney ate dinner. That was the story.
There was more to the story.
Thank you,
You're not
Anna.
Dressing it up enough. You got to dress up the story a little bit.
Come here and hold me. Hold me and make it better.
For those
you can stay over
for those just tuning in, for those just tuning in, I'll give you a chance to dress it up. I feel it was a story about a man eating dinner. What was so great about it?
A man that turned 66 and decided to go on an iconic route, Route 66, on his 66th birthday, to go and see the great places along the way.
Meet the people of America.
He's a real person.
He's a real person.
He's been fleecing the pocketbooks of America for decades. So, yeah, the least he can do is shake a couple hands and frequent a couple businesses. That whole British invasion thing. Paul McCartney, I power rank him four of the Beatles. He's four.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
I don't know the Beatles. Do I look like I grew up with the Beatles? I have no idea how to power rank the Beatles.
I'm anti-Beatle. Quite frankly, I'm anti-Beatle.
I do find the conversation that they're the most overrated band in history interesting. I don't have a position on that, but I do feel there are a lot of people out there who feel that they are extraordinarily overrated.
I'm one of them. I think after their second album, the rest of it is... Yeah, you're stoned. I get it.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
That's
all right.
Where I am with it.
Well, welcome to the Money Spot, brought to you by our friends at Cash Creek Casino. It's Cash Creek's Year of Fortune. Someone will win $8,888 at 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. every Saturday and Sunday. Visit cashcreek.com for more. Those sultry sounds you heard just a moment ago, they belong to Jim Cosmore. He's in for Dan Dibley the rest of the week. Dibs, good luck. He's down in Vegas enjoying the madness. Tim Hardaway, the five-time All-Star, is coming up in about 10 minutes. Matt Barrows will join us to talk Niners at 9:10, Monty Poole at 9:35. So, Warriors coming off another convincing win last night, 117-107 at Minnesota against what might be the softest team in the NBA. Seriously, how much more of a situation do you need to get up and play well? The Warriors are on the second leg of a back-to-back. They're the defending champs. You got $100 million contracts handed out to multiple players on that team. S-O-F-T, soft. Karl Anthony Towns is a really good Robin. He will never be a Batman because he just does not have the killer instinct.
Wow, interesting. That's interesting. That's a pretty hot take because they're thinking he is Batman.
He's not. Where's the killer instinct? He can play. Last night, 20 and 20, He's a great Robin because he can give you the production. But at some point, someone in that locker room has to rally the troops. One of my favorite stories in all of sports was back in the early 90s. Mark Messier was traded to the New York Rangers. And Messier was brought in to put that team over the top. He had won in Edmonton. He was a team guy. He was a leader. He wasn't brought in to score 70 goals. He was brought in to push the locker room further. And his first game with the team, they're losing at the first intermission, nothing big. And everyone's sitting around in the locker room, just ho-hum at intermission. And the training table was in the middle of the dressing room. And he walks up to the training table, and he tips the thing over and destroys it in front of everyone. And afterwards, the media catches wind of this and asks, why'd you destroy the training table? You guys went on the win. You're down 2-1. It's whatever. It's the first period. He goes, when we're in that room, I want to be able to make eye contact with every single one of my teammates. I don't need a training table in the middle of the room preventing me from seeing the guys I'm out there with every single night. That's what a leader does. That's not Carl Anthony Towns. Carl Anthony Towns will go out. He'll give you 20-20, but he's not going to give you the speech at halftime. That's what Jimmy Butler was there for. They couldn't handle it, and that's what they paid Wiggins to do, and he is not capable of
it. No,
they got a bunch of Robins on that team. They got no Batman.
And some Joker, too. And I'll tell you this, on the Butler point of it, this might tell you more about the makeup of that locker room. Butler was supposed to be that guy who shook everyone's tree and got him roll. And the minute he did, everyone cowered in a corner.
Yeah, they couldn't take it.
They didn't rally. They were like, oh my goodness, I'm supposed to show up and get my trophy just for being here.
Now,
no one's supposed to talk mean to me.
Now, Coase, that's how you deliver a story.
See, I'm just going to say, I still have the best story this morning after that story.
You like the Messier story over the Paul McCartney story?
Oh, my God, no.
Put it up on the Twitter poll.
Yeah, please.
Yes,
please.
Twitter poll it.
And it wasn't even close. Your story energized. And you know what? I related. I'm sitting there saying, why'd he turn it over? And then he said, I want to look at my teammates' eyes. Do you know those guys?
Do you know who Mark Messier is?
Yeah, that's hockey.
Don't interrupt him.
Yeah, so you're going to hate?
I'm throwing him off the trail. Trying to throw him off the trail.
It's a classic Tibbs move. When he sees him getting in the position, he quickly throws a low blow, gets the ref involved, goes to the corner, gets some water.
I'm going to keep punching.
I'm a P1. I know how to work this game.
But it's amazing. Here's a guy that turns over the table. It wasn't about them playing bad. It's about wanting to see these guys' eyes. And I'm telling you right now, that's what guys need. And when you have that type of leadership, it turns you. Instead of a guy driving at 66 on Route 66.
Well,
to get a hamburger.
To get back to the Messier point of it.
Jesus Christ.
To get back to the Messier point of it.
That's why you jumped on it. Messier, after he told the story so good, you came in with Butler. And you said, yes, Joe, that's so true. Look how fired up you got. He sparked the conversation. What no damn friggin' hot sauce sandwich and I'm on Route 66?
Sandwich.
He pulled over and you know what he did? He had dinner.
He had a soda.
Wow, it's relatable because I, too, eat dinner.
Right, and he had a couple of sodas.
Exactly. You don't know what it's like to be in that locker room, but you know the soda and having a burger. So I'm relating to the average American. You're talking about something people don't get. About Messier, though, he brought that over from a team in Edmonton where they had won four straight.
Right.
And everyone thinks of Wayne Gretzky on that team. Well, he was the greatest, but Messier was the leader. Even Gretzky to this day will tell you Messier was the pulse of that locker room, and that's what he brought over to the Rangers that time. And didn't he give the guarantee, too, when they were down in the series? He gave the guarantee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to that as well. That was one of the great – that was when they were winning was when the Knicks were deep in the playoffs and OJ was barreling down the highway with Al Collins.
No, we don't need that.
But that's that famous ESPN 30 for 30. That was all happening at the same time. Like the sports world was insane. It was June, I believe. That was just this insane month with everything that was taking place. But what it leads back to – somehow, some way, is the Warriors, the killer instinct, and the upcoming playoff push. The best player sometimes might not be the leader of the team. The leader might not be the most productive player, but you need both. You need a great player, and you need a leader. I was going through the playoff push over the last 4 years. Year one, they needed 21 games to get it done. They went 16-5. Year two, the 73-win season, was the most grueling playoff push. 24 total games, they didn't win. They went 15-9. Year three, the first year of Durant, was the easiest run. It took one more game than the minimum. 17, they went 16-1. And then last year, 16-5. Pretty much crushed everyone outside of that series against Houston. What are we looking at this year?
Well, by the way,
what should be the expectation and what are we facing?
You add those numbers up that you just gave me in playoff games solely.
Yeah.
83 games. So in four seasons, their bodies have played five seasons of NBA games.
Yeah.
So that's another thing to throw into the equation, that these guys have really gone through a lot more than every other team in the National Basketball Association. And when you add the outside influences, this could be a tougher run. Maybe we sit here and we start the arrogance talk again. In fact, earlier today, Stephen called him. He's an arrogant Warrior fan because you can sit back and know that your team is going to be in it. But maybe because of all the things they've been through, maybe it's not as easy as we think it's going to be.
It's not easy, and they're letting you know it's not easy. Didn't you have Kevin Durant, for Pete's sakes, close a couple of weeks ago when he says, oh, we're supposed to play with joy. Oh, we're supposed to play happy now. I mean, you listen at everything that these guys
are saying. Who's the Warriors' Messier? Or do they need one?
Is it Draymond? I don't know if it's Draymond. I don't know if it's
– I think it's – I honestly think it's Steph. I think Steph's the leader. It's just in a different fashion than what we're accustomed to seeing. We are accustomed to seeing the loud leader, the vocal leader who is constant. We're more used to seeing the Ray Lewis type of leader, the guy that gets the camera, everyone's gathered around him, he's screaming, he's yelling, he's dancing, and everyone's getting fired up.
Steph reminds me of LT, the LaDainian Thomas that I play with. You'd have never seen him really riled up except that AFC Championship game.
Was he the leader in that locker room? Was that the guy that if you needed to go to one guy, he was the one that was saying something?
Quiet, just like Steph. Very well, you watch him, his demeanor, calm, but just a superstar. LaDainian Thomas was unbelievable. Coach, you
So when he speaks, he might not speak all the time,
yes,
but when he did,
exactly,
everyone's like, I'm getting back down the middle here. Let's get back in the lane.
LT's upset. LT's disappointed because you knew every Sunday, you knew 21 was going to show up, MVP of the league. You saw the way he was, but didn't walk with a big bat. But when he swung it.
But today's NBA guy, does he act the same way? Can you have the same type of leader in the NBA? And the way the NBA is today, where these guys have everything handed to them. Oh, you know, we play too many back-to-backs. All right, NBA says, well, then let's not give you so many back-to-backs. Let's give you more days off. Let's extend the season out a little bit more because I want to make sure you guys are good and comfy. In today's game, can you have a fired-up guy keeping them lined up? 82 games, a lot of games.
Is there one? Let's start with that. Can we think of one offhand? Can we think of the loud vocal leader anywhere? I mean, if I go up and down the standings, who's the leader in Houston? Paul will get you a little bit riled up, but James Harden, by and large, I don't ever really see him yelling or saying a whole lot. In Denver, in Portland, San Antonio.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Popovich leading it. Oklahoma City, it kind of feels like it's Paul George's team now. Feels like the guy who was really loud, too brash, too out there. Utah and the Clippers. Like, that's what we're looking at in the West. Do you even have the fiery leader in the NBA anymore? Milwaukee's got Giannis, but he seems pretty cool and collected with the way he goes about his business. Toronto, Kawhi, but it's his first year with the team. The Sixers, they're a vocal bunch. But I don't know whose team that is. It feels like it's Embiid's team, but you brought in Butler. You have Simmons. Tobias Harris is there now. The Pacers, the Celtics. That's supposed to be Kyrie's team, and it's falling apart a little bit. Detroit, Brooklyn, and Miami. And by the way, Brooklyn, D'Angelo Russell. I know you were there last night watching that.
Man.
You think the Lakers are regretting that trade?
They've got to be. You know what?
To expect a 19-year-old to be buttoned up and then trade him, and then a few years later, well, we didn't see this coming. You probably should have thought it could have happened.
Magic and Rob Pelinka should be taking so much more heat than they're taking for giving up on a guy who is an all-star caliber player. He's going to be the face of the Nets, and they'll be a playoff team before the Lakers ever come close.
They got two max spots this summer. No one realizes that.
Man,
they got D'Angelo Russell. They're going to the playoffs. They're currently a 7 seed with a game-and-a-half lead over Miami for the 8, and they got two max spots coming up. After screwing that trade up with Boston that gave away all those assets, they're finally coming back around.
You know what, Joe? There's a couple places that I don't want my kid necessarily to go. And to go and party, to go and be a sports guy, sometimes it may be L.A., it may be Miami. Certain places, kids or young men, it's just hard on them. And another place that we always talk about is Vegas. It's a reason why. Was D'Angelo Russell going to be the same player if he was back, if he was in L.A. now? Maturity, is he a better player? Without a doubt. Sometimes these young guys go to these cities where it's the stars, they're around so many things, and they're not focused on their craft. You put a guy at certain situation in a different place where they can focus, and sometimes it take a good kick in the you know where to let you know, guess what? It's not about you. We'll trade you out the door. And sometimes that's what guys need for their career. How many guys have you seen, everyone went to a certain place, thought the guys were just the bus, all of a sudden got traded or went to another place, and it was that come to Jesus, well, my God, I'm either going to be a bust or what people view me. So I think sometimes that motivates guys too.
It's a good point. It's a good point. We'll jump back into this, but we're going to the phones now. Five-time NBA All-Star, former Warrior point guard. You know him, you love him, the great Tim Hardaway with Joe Lowe and Coase here on 95.7 The Game. Tim, thanks for your time. How are you this morning?
I'm great, man. No complaints. You know, I'm up and at him. So, you know, it's all good. I see y'all as, you know, feisty as ever right now. So that's good, too.
You know how we do it here. We're going to bring you into a conversation we were just having. The NBA now versus the NBA during your era. It felt like back in the day, and this wasn't just the NBA, it was all sports, you could have more of that vocal, aggressive leader, a guy who was able to come out and challenge his teammates, maybe a little bit more than now. We were going through a lot of the teams, and it feels like the vocal leader, the really loud type A personality, isn't necessarily as prominent now as it was maybe back when you were playing. Does that sound accurate, or am I off base there?
You are accurate, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day. And I said, you know, back in the day, you know, we come up to somebody, or the 12th man come up to somebody, or the 10th man come up to somebody on your team and say, or just come to the team and say, this is not acceptable, fellas. You know, we better than this team. All right, so-and-so, you can't let this guy beat you off the dribble. He's not better than you. So-and-so, we got to play better defense. So-and-so, you can't turn the ball over. You know, that's what you need on your team. A coach can only coach you. You know, in practice, make you understand what you need to do, what we going to run, how we going to run, and what we looking for on the offense, on defense, how we going to play defense. This is going to be, you know, we're going to send them to the baseline. This is where our help going to be. This is how we going to play pick and rolls and this and that. But the coach can only say and do so much as a team leader, you know, as a team, as a basketball player. You got to step up and talk to your teammates and make them accountable for what they do. And I say this about Detroit Pistons right now. I said once they get a superstar, which they have now in Blake Griffin, and he's telling Reggie Jackson and he's telling Andre Drummond, you're not doing enough for us to win these games. Andre Drummond, you go out there and get a double-double, 20 rebounds and 20 points every game. Reggie Jackson, you need to come out here and play like the old Reggie Jackson and get your confidence level back because we need you so we go to the playoffs. And, you know, and that's what he's been doing all season long. He's been holding them guys accountable out there on the basketball court, and they've been listening to him, and that's why they're in the playoff push. As long as if they don't have nobody to push them and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do out there on the court, and it's not the coaches, because the coaches, you know, they get tired of the coach. You see the coach every day, you just get tired of the coach. You're like, yeah, coach, yeah, whatever, coach. Well, sometimes it goes in one ear and come out the other. But as a player, you look and you saying, look, I'm letting my teammates down. I'm letting this all-star down. I'm letting this guy down. He's doing everything he can do to make us win, to help us win, and put us in position to win, and I'm letting him down. So when he looks at him and Blake Griffin talks to him and tell him that you messing up, he takes that to heart. He wants to come out and play harder for Blake Griffin and wants to win and get to the playoffs for Blake Griffin. That's what they're doing now. So, yeah, it's not enough of that around the league. Not at all. Not at all. It's too passive. You know, I don't want to hurt your feelings. Oh, man, you know, my bad. Nobody don't want to fight nobody, anything like that. That's not – I mean, if you want to win, sometimes you got to get up in somebody's face and say, hey, man, you got to bring more to the table, baby. You're not doing it. And that's what I praise about Draymond Green. But at times he go overboard, but at times he's right on the money.
So, Tim, if it's got to be self-policed and players got to police themselves, don't worry about the coaches or the organization doing it, how do you figure out who the leader is? Does the organization say, hey, Tim Hardaway, you're going to be the voice of this team? Or does it have to organically happen in the locker room setting or when the team's on the road? Do the leaders just organically start to pop up?
You know, you're born being a leader. You know, I saw Draymond Green. He was a leader in college. You know, he led by example. He went out there and played the way it's supposed to be played. He was in people's faces saying, look, we got to play this way. You can't let this happen. We got to rebound a ball, box this guy out, do this, do that. So, and then his first year when he came here, he wasn't established. He didn't feel like he had the confidence or he was ready to step in that leadership role. But that next year after his first year, he knew exactly what he wanted to do, how he wanted to do it, because he was like, look, I can't play like this. I can't do this. I'm going to step in here. I'm going to tell Steph what he needs to do. I'm going to tell Clay what he needs to do. And I heard this. He told Steph, look, you're going to be MVP this year. Clay, you're going to be Defensive Player of the Year this year. All right, hey, we're going to win a championship this year. And at first, when they walked into training camp, they was like, oh, yeah, right, whatever, whatever, whatever. And he kept reiterating that to them. And they started buying into it. And they was like, okay, yeah, we can do this. That's why I call him the head of the snake, okay? Draymond Green is the head of the snake. And he really get this team going and get them focused when they need to get focused. And you're just born with that. You know, it just comes to you with that. When it's time to lead, you just go out there and lead.
No question, Tim. That's a great analogy. Just so you're talking about speaking into existence, and that breeds that. And he was able to do that with those two superstars. Timmy, you know styles make fight. Ali, Frazier, those two, three, the rumbling and all the different fights they had was classic. Then, you know, George Foreman knocked Frazier out in the first 30 seconds, but Ali could beat him. How much is this in the East? Not saying that the Philadelphia 76ers is the best team in the East, but if styles make fights, is they not the best matchup, you think, for the Dubs when you're just talking about matchups?
You know, I'm still going back and forth with who is the better matchup with the Dubs. You know, you got Toronto. They right. played the Dubs very well.
Right.
Without Kawhi Leonard. You know, they came in here in Golden State and just
spanked them.
Beat them up.
Right.
Beat them up. You know, without Kawhi Leonard. You got the 76ers. You know, they still trying to find a way. I don't think they're quite ready for the Dubs. I really don't think they're quite ready for the Dubs. Somebody like Boston, I think if they get to that point, they understand how to beat the Dubs. I think they understand what they need to do. And they're, if they get to that position, because they got a long way to go. You know, after they won like three out of four games and out west, they went back home and, you know, and going back through the same stuff they've been through. So, you know, it's going to be kind of tough for them. But I feel that Toronto is probably the best team that come out the East and play against Golden State and give them a run for their money. You know, they got the size. They have the athleticism. They can switch out on guards, you know, and they can score the basketball. And so I think that team, same way with Boston, but, you know, I don't think Boston has found their rhythm yet. I don't think they still looking for their identity. They still looking for who is going to do what and how they going to do it. But I think Toronto is right there. So I think that's the team out of the East that will give Golden State a run for their money.
The great Tim Hardaway with Joe Lowe and Coase here on 95.7 The Game. It's always interesting to watch this team play when one of the stars may be down. If Steph's out for a night, and noticeably recently when KD was out, it feels like we're watching a different basketball team entirely. Without Kevin Durant, it feels like there's a little bit more ball movement. But with KD, it's such a much more dangerous lineup in terms of who has the ball in his hands. Why does it look so different with KD versus without KD?
Well, you know, KD is KD. You know, sometimes they want to run stuff through KD, and at times nobody is open. But when they are open, he'll get Steph the ball. He'll get Clay the ball. He'll get whoever's open that's cutting in the middle of the ball in the middle of the lane. But if it's not a for sure pass, KD is going to hold on to it. And that's one of his gripes in the NBA. You know, some people just don't pass and move fluently. They don't do it. But when he does do it, when they are focused, the whole team is focused, the ball does move. The ball, you know, KD does try to get the ball out of his hand and try to go down and set a pick for somebody to come up and play that way. But at times, you know, when he's out, it's a different game. It's a different system. You know, they get, you know, like when he was here, when he wasn't here, that's the way they played. But when he was here, I mean, while he's here, They're giving him the ball more and telling him, look, you be this facilitator. You do this, you do that. Make sure we get in this play. Make sure you run that play. Make sure you get this person the ball. Or if you don't get nobody the ball, then you could go one-on-one and take your man yourself. And that's what him having the ball for a long period of time. They give it to him at 20 seconds. Yeah, it looks like he got it for like 24 seconds, you know, and then he got to make a play. But, you know, versus them coming in and just passing and cutting and moving, then they rely, when he's not in, they rely on Draymond Green a lot to facilitate. They give him the ball, then they move without the ball, then he passing the ball to somebody, then he's setting the screen, and he popping back out, and he throwing alley-oops to different people. So, you know, it's totally two different teams, you're right. But they do want KD to pass the ball and make plays. That's why he's holding on to the ball just a little bit.
Always a pleasure to speak with the five-time NBA All-Star, former Warrior point guard, Warrior legend Tim Hardaway with Joe Lowe and Coase on 95.7 The Game. Tim, we know it's early, but we always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, I appreciate you all. Keep up the good work. Thanks a lot. And let's speak some more while the playoffs going on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tim. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Always nice to talk with Tim Hardaway on a Warrior Wednesday, brought to you by our friends at Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Text line going nuts. Chilton Auto Body 95795. They want winners. They know the show gave them the Clippers over the Pacers yesterday. They want more winners. Well, we'll have winners for you. Maybe we'll close the show with it today. Lowe's hot on a couple games tonight. It's a nice NBA card. Maybe right around 9:50. We'll just call it winners, and then we'll leave.
Winners, winners, chicken dinners.
I never got that. If I'm winning and I'm making money, I don't want chicken.
I know.
I'm going to want to live a little bit.
I want steak.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little bit higher,
I would say. Give me Kobe beef. Give me Kobe beef if I'm winning, baby. If it's winning time, give me some Kobe beef.
Winner, winner, Wagyu dinner?
Yeah,
we can say that. Tibbs isn't here. We can say that.
We can.
Yeah, we can.
We can.
You're right.
We can really just get, yeah, carnivorous. We can just, we can be like just some dinosaurs up in here.
Yeah, we don't want Dibs here. The guy mushed me yesterday, Joe, by the way. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, this come on now.
How, he mushed you out the door, going out the door?
I thought you had a nice day.
He went all in on Toledo, whatever he did. Temple.
Temple.
Oh, Temple.
Ah, yes.
Done all this research. So, Dibs,
you found yourself mixed up in the first four, did you?
Yeah.
Boy, you're on one these days.
Yeah.
This guy's going to be coming in here telling me about the Women's Tennis Association in the next few weeks.
We got problems.
I got a great matchup for you in the round of 250 here.
Yeah.
All right. Where did I want to go with this? All right, Coase, I haven't asked you this yet. This has been an ongoing conversation on this show for a while, and it's a conversation that always allows the people answering the question the opportunity to change their position. It's going to go until the playoffs, and then it officially locks. The polls close, and it's over. It happens to be today's Take Your Pick poll question, which is brought to you by FH Daily Chevrolet. It's up on the website now at 957thegame.com. How many games will the Warriors lose in the Western Conference playoffs? Eliminate the finals. How many games will they lose in the Western Conference playoffs? Over, under 3.5.
Ooh, I'm going under.
You're going to say under. Now, Dibs has been over from day one. Low started over, transitioned to under. We'll find out where he is as of today, but you like the under there.
I'm going to go under because as you were asking the question, I was looking at the series because I've been putting, and again, things can change between now and the end of the season, but I was looking at some of the matchups and I thought, all right, I get it. If you lose one to, say, the Clippers. Clippers beat you during the regular season. They play hard under Doc Rivers. I could see you losing one.
Clippers are no joke right now.
They are no joke at all. San Antonio, smoking hot right now. They just beat the Golden State Warriors. If you end up in a second round, if the Spurs right now stay at 5 and knock off Portland, and Portland has beat you one time, I'm thinking, yeah, you can get them once. You're not going to get them multi-times in a 7-game series. I thought, you know what? In my head, as you're asking the question, I'm going, all right, I got them at 3. You gave me 3.5, I'll jump on the under.
You'll take the under, the 3.5. Now, are you still of the mindset that it's under 3.5 losses in the Western Conference playoffs?
You said it, not including the Western Conference championship game, though.
No.
It includes that. Yeah. Not the finals. Against Philly, Toronto, Boston, whatever it may be. It's just the Western Conference playoffs, so a maximum of 3 series. But, obviously, if they don't even make it, that means the overhead, because they would have lost 4 games.
Right. I'm starting to heat up toward that. I'm starting to heat up toward that over.
You're going to go back to the over. You started over, you went under now. Like I said, polls don't close until the 80-second game is complete. Yeah. You're free to do as you like.
I got them in the Western Conference losing two. So, but not like you said. I'm with you how you laid it out in the first two rounds. Absolutely. I think one of those Western Conference early, I think they sweep. I don't even think they lose one.
So one of the first two series is a sweep.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And then the next one, they'll probably lose one. They'll probably lose one or two in that next, the second round. And in that third round, I'd see them lose two. So I say four. Four is my number.
So you're going to go with four.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you get to Houston in the conference final, you think there's a chance the Rockets can take two.
That's it.
All right.
Can see that.
That's why the number's 3.5. Because honestly, you can make that case.
Yes.
You know, I could sit back and say, you know what, when the Warriors are right, when everyone's healthy and together, I don't care who the center is, no one can touch him. No one can touch him. The times that we were able this year to get kind of angst-ridden about the Golden State Warriors is when they were always without a guy. But remember when they lost two? They lost at Toronto, lost back to, their next game at Detroit. We got a little bit of angst in that one. Then Toronto comes to town. They lost to Toronto. In between, they won four straight. But you lose to Toronto, who's a good team, you get a little bit of agita. They go to Utah after you win a couple of games. You win a couple after the loss to Toronto, you right the ship. You go to Utah, Utah spanks you around, beats you by five. Then you start to say, oh, you can beat the Sacramentos and Memphises of the world without your stars, but the Utahs come back and they get you. Every one of the losses on their list gave you reason to have angst. But when they're together, man, I don't know who can touch them.
You say that, and when they have got, let's just talk about Philly. Let's just talk
Philly. You're riding Philly hard.
I'm just on the matchup.
Yeah, it's...
Let's just go with the match. Give me your reasoning for that game. Because you played them twice. And I just want to know the reason, because you had your all-stars. The matchup to me is what's intriguing. Especially at that one position that I don't see an answer for. So you had your stars. And we did an outstanding draft that day, Joe, when we talked about me and Dibs went at it and just drafting both these teams and just saying, wow.
Yeah, you were allowed to take from just those two teams, the Sixers and the Warriors, and you draft your own starting five going back and forth. There were some interesting teams. That was before the Tobias Harris trade, too.
Yes.
So he wasn't even in play that day.
Yes. So I look at that. So I'm going to let you go ahead and tell me, walk me through that. Walk me off this ledge.
I'll walk you through it. I love the fact that
you're
so high on
Thank you, because I didn't know what his question was. So thank you for stepping in on that.
Here's the answer to it. Philly, should they find their way to the Warriors, is going to be operating at a very, very big disadvantage. Number one, for them to get through the East, it's going to take a lot. And their key player, Embiid, has that knee issue. He's going to need to be out there in every game. He can't have a night off like he got last night against Charlotte. That doesn't work. He's going to need to be going in every game. You end up with the Celtics. Sure, the Celtics aren't as great as expected this season. The Celtics still have Philadelphia's number. Every time they take the court, they know they can beat the Sixers,
they
continue to do it. So you probably have to go seven with them. If you get past Giannis in the Bucks, that's looking like seven. You can get mixed up in an early round matchup. You're not the Warriors. You're not just going to sweep through somebody. They're young, and they're going to have some pitfalls. And just to get to the finals is going to take so much out of that team. And then they're going to open, if they don't have a better record, at Oracle. And despite what Clay and everyone said about the Oracle crowd, game one of the finals against someone other than the Cavaliers is going to energize that place. If you know it's Philadelphia coming in, we are going to have how many days to talk about that matchup? Butler, Simmons, Embiid. Selling that to the fan base is not going to be difficult. People are going to want to see that. You're going to get a great crowd over there. It's going to be all the hype about the final push at Oracle. These could be the final four games. I mean, honestly, you might only get two more games. Yeah. If they would sweep the Sixers, not saying they will. It's very disrespectful to say that.
I understand.
But you might
only
get two more games. So you're going to have this raucous crowd. Philly's going to come in, and they're going to try to get situated. And you can just see that beautiful ball movement. Just setting guys up. Steph passing it, running circles around everyone, getting it, chucking it up like you saw last night, burying it, place goes nuts. Philly ends up down 11-3 to start the game, and just like that, the Warriors are all over him. It's too much too soon. You are correct that all things being equal, everyone rested, everyone healthy, everyone going into a game, Philadelphia poses a significant problem because the Warriors don't find themselves in a ton of matchups against elite big men like Embiid. What do they get? They play Denver, and they get the Joker. Okay. They'll see him again in a couple weeks. He's a hell of a talent. Karl Anthony Towns goes for his soft serve ice cream 20-20 last night. Great. I mean, what did it do? Did you and Wiggins, did you really – nice box score, but you were never really in that game. Like, that was a great spot for you. That was a great spot for you considering where the Warriors were. And you grabbed the lead, and then you got boated pretty much the rest of the way out. Who are the other big men that they get tested with? You're right. Embiid poses a problem, but Simmons – you're going to create a situation where you just allow Simmons to have open jumpers all day. And what's he going to do? Is he going to knock them down? That's a big problem. That's what the Celtics did. He had some really bad games against the Celtics last year. Really bad games. They just left him wide open. He had a game, if I'm not mistaken, where Ben Simmons didn't even shoot. He just refused to shoot the ball. He was so shook mentally.
That's right.
So shook mentally. And then you got Jimmy Butler. He can be a big help in these situations. But then if he starts getting mouthy in the locker room, like we talked about earlier, the young guys turtle up a little bit. Tobias Harris is playing for that max deal. He's not going to want to step on anyone's toes, but he's also going to want to make some plays. And then you got the coaching matchup. Steve Kerr, who's been the four finals in a row, this would be five, versus Brett Brown. Like, what's his situation, right? He's coached them out of games. Philadelphia's biggest problem is that they cannot close in the final minute or two. They find ways to take wins and give them away. They find ways to mismanage situations late. And when you add all of that up against Denver, against Houston, it's okay. Seven-game series, you can make that work. Against the Warriors, you can't. That's part of the reason this team... It's one of the primary reasons why this team so much fun to watch and why they're so lethal, because you can't beat them in the margins. When it comes to the details, when it comes to the minutiae, there's of the other 29 teams, no one's got that. No one's able to beat them. Every time we talk about a Warrior loss, some calamity has to take place. Like, you need two guys fighting each other. Like in L.A., when Draymond and KD were going at it for them to lose. You need them to completely lack the desire to do what they love more than anything in the world, which is play basketball. In order to beat them. You don't get that in the playoffs. They're not going to lay down. The Philadelphia matchup, you're right. X's and O's standpoint up on the chalkboard, but there are all those little details that are going to be so difficult for Philadelphia to overcome. That's why every time we have this conversation, for me, it circles back to Milwaukee. I don't think they're getting enough credit for what they've done. Everything about them should sound the danger bell.
Philly just went there and shook him. Giannis had a huge day.
But they're a team. They're not this collection of talent like some teams are trying to do. They're a team. They've got a leader. They got a good coach in Budenholzer. They got a bench. The injury to Brogdon, that's the biggest problem because he won't be back for the second round. That's what's hurting them right now. But that's a team with a lot of balance. That's a team that can stay disciplined against you. They don't come unglued at the seams. And you're seeing it. There are a lot of similarities between year one of the Warrior run and year one of the Milwaukee run. That's the one thing I've been looking at. I think either way, one thing we can all appreciate is the fact that this year's NBA Finals, it's going to be something different for us.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, whoever you get, if you get Milwaukee, we're stoked. If you get Philly, we're stoked. If Boston gets hot and gets there, we're stoked. Toronto, I'm still kind of... But if they get there, it's Kawhi Leonard. We're stoked. I mean, we're going to get a great matchup this year.
When you did your 76ers...
As I arrogantly just dismiss everyone else in the Western Conference.
I know. You know, that's where we're at, though, basically.
Sorry, West.
Yeah, even the Rockets, who go to sleep thinking about and wake up thinking about the Warriors. No one's thinking about the West. We're thinking about the East. When you guys did your Sixers-Warriors draft, was it before Tobias Harris came there?
Yeah.
It was before?
Yeah, because it was right around the time of the All-Star game. I want to say before that, because we were kind of tying it all in together.
So if you take a look at the 76ers now, I think the argument around the NBA is the best starting lineup goes to the Golden State Warriors. But if they're 1A has to be the 76ers starting lineup. Because you threw in Tobias Harris... And I stop at Jimmy Butler. They added Jimmy Butler. They got a tough voice. Embiid, who I think shoots too many threes.
Do you?
But if you throw in Tobias Harris, who was the best player on the Clippers at a playoff point, so he's the best player on a playoff team, and he has been able to meld in quite nicely with the 76ers, their starting five is very, very good. I don't know about their depth,
and I think
Toronto has more depth. That's why I'm still on a Toronto bandwagon. Boy, but I'll tell you, if the Warriors are one... Sixers are 1A.
Without a doubt.
Starting lineup.
They got some players. They got players. That's all I'm saying.
Help me with something.
I'm sorry.
Why? No. This isn't to critique, okay. But help me with something.
Yes.
Why is it somehow, some way, we are all so willing to just overlook Milwaukee? You realize Milwaukee's 7-up on Philadelphia. Best record in the business, 53-18. Best road record at 25-12. MVP in Giannis. Why do we consistently overlook them? Not to say that you guys are wrong.
Giannis is a beast.
It's like a psychological thing for me right now. So many people are willing to overlook this team. Why? Why do we do that?
I love Giannis. Giannis is a boy dog. He could take over a game. I love him. He's absolutely going to be MVP. I don't think when you look at what the 76ers have done, I think defensively they got more talent than Giannis collectively. I think they got guys on the perimeter. When you look at what they brought in Tobias. And also when you look at J.J. Redick, you look at far as the three ball shooters. I think they got better now, just the range. I just think defensively and just all around collective, they're starting five. I'm not disagreeing with Giannis. Giannis is they're rolling. They're covering spreads. They've been money. But I just think that the 76ers have a chance to gel, and just talent-wise, I think they have more.
Here's part of the reason that maybe I overlooked the Milwaukee Bucks, and it's because if you follow the NBA enough, you are led down the path of, well, you can't be there until you lose at a far, you know, you got to go far and lose to get over the hump.
Yeah, all right.
And they haven't gotten far. I'm looking at last year, they're 44-38. That's a playoff team. But a first-round loss to the Celtics. Sure, it was 4-3, but they haven't gotten there. It's so much different from the first round of the conference final. And I think for me, my bias is you got to lose deep before you can get to the prize.
Except in one very specific instance that's going to hurt you in this case.
I think I know where you're going.
And do you know what that instance is? It happens to be the exact same scenario, losing in seven in the opening round to the Los Angeles Clippers by the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, exactly.
There are so many similarities between this Warrior team and this Bucks team. Steph emerging as an MVP. Someone everyone knew, someone people liked, Giannis the Greek Freak the same way, but now taking that step forward on the national stage to the point where it's like, all right, now you're on the upper tier. Now, you know, if we didn't believe before, we believe now. Taking the game to another level. Giannis going out winning the MVP like Steph did in year one. Giannis putting the team on his back, leading them to the promised land. But while doing that, you start to notice these guys around him. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, in the instance of the Warriors, in the instance of the Bucks. It's everything they've been doing. Brogdon, Middleton. Middleton went to the All-Star game this year.
Yep.
No one really talked about Chris Middleton, much like people didn't talk about Klay Thompson. They've got the best record, so they're going to have home court throughout. They've gone on these crazy streaks. Everything in the year before, they lost a tough series in the opening round in seven. There are so many parallels there. It's eerie to me. I'm not saying I necessarily believe in it, but it's just one of these things that every time we talk about a potential finals matchup with Toronto or Boston or Philly, I think the number one thing that dogs Milwaukee is that it's Milwaukee, right?
True.
The other that we're talking about, true big time marquee sports towns in Philadelphia and Boston. You talk about Toronto, there's some allure there because it's across the border. But by and large, because it's not LeBron, Milwaukee is, well, yeah, it's Wisconsin. I don't really know what goes on up there, right? It's Milwaukee.
Yeah. A lot of beer drinking, a lot of sausage. You know what you do? You're going to tailgate at a Packer game. You might do the same at a Brewer game, and the Bucks are off the radar.
You go to Lake Geneva in the summers. Enjoy yourself out there.
You actually
on the lake.
Do. You do. You do that, and you have a good darn good time. I'm not kidding. I'm not going to kid you on that one, brother. I'm not going to kid you on that one. So I've been there. I know all about it.
Which path of the previous 4 years was the most challenging for the Warriors to get through? And I'm not talking necessarily about amount of games. I'm talking about the four-team lineup to get to the championship. I want to compare it to what they're going to face this year. All right? Year one, if you remember, New Orleans, Memphis, Houston, Cleveland. The Pelican series was nothing. It was a sweep. The Memphis series got a little dicey. They went down 2-1. Boys ate some barbecue, came back to win it in six. The Houston series went five, if memory serves me correctly, and then they beat the Cavs in six. 21 total games, 16-5. Year two, they win 73 during the regular season, but then it starts to get a little dicey in the playoffs. Houston, Portland, Steph had gotten hurt against the Rockets. OKC goes seven, Cleveland goes seven. So it was 10 games through the first two series, and then it was 14 games through the final two. You end up losing. That OKC matchup was probably, even though they lost to Cleveland, the OKC matchup was probably the toughest that they faced in the entire playoff run. Even tougher than the Houston one last year, would you say?
I think so. Yeah.
Year three, they blow through everybody. Portland, Utah, the Spurs, and Kawhi got hurt, and then Cleveland. And then last year, it was the Spurs in the opening round in five, New Orleans in five, Houston in seven, Cleveland in four. This year, right now as it stands, you'd be looking at this. The Clippers in the opening round. They've been playing good basketball. I'm not saying they can take you six or seven, but you're not. I don't think you're just going to blow through them like you did New Orleans and Portland in some of these series. The second round would be the winner of the Blazers-Spurs matchup, which most of us would probably agree is going to be the Spurs, given Portland's troubles in the playoffs. And then you end up with one of the final four in Houston, OKC, Denver, Utah. You have to have a winner from each of those, and then the winner of that overall game would make it there. So you're probably looking at Denver or Houston, in my opinion.
Right.
And then you get to the East, which could be Philly, Toronto, Milwaukee-Boston. Where would you rank this year's current run?
Are we dismissing Indiana? I can't believe what Nate McMillan's doing with the Indiana Pacers. They're a 3 seed right now, and their best scorer is out?
I'm going to the year. Because they've lost 7 straight on the road. And okay. If you're not winning on the road, I think you're going to have a big problem in the playoffs.
Fair enough. I think
that McMillan for Coach of the Year deserves a lot of credit. The team's way better than expected. I don't see them emerging out of the West, though. It's going to be too much without Oladipo.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a fun story. Yep. It's a story that deserves a lot more credit than it gets.
Yep, totally. Absolutely does.
So all marinate on the question. Let me get us legal. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, aradio.com sports station. Good morning. Welcome to your 8 o'clock hour of Joe Lo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. But with a twist, Dibs in Vegas for the madness. We wish him the best of luck. Jim Cozumore in his stead for the rest of the week. Matt Barrows in a little over an hour at 9:10. The Niners, according to reports, are going to have dinner with Nick Bosa tonight. We'll talk about that. Monty Poole will join us at 9:35. Current conversation, if you want to hit us on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795, or if you want to call us on the phones, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Of the previous four playoff runs versus this year's playoff run, where does this year rank compared to the rest? Is it going to be tougher? Is it going to be easier? Is it going to be the worst? Is it going to be the best? Coz, your thoughts.
I think it's going to, well, when you say easiest, that's hard because they're all going to be difficult. I think it's setting up for the Western Conference path to be far more simple than it has been. And I know that's not the easiest turn of phrase, but I think if I look at the recent past, they have had to get over a couple of hurdles. I think this year's path to the finals from the West might be cleaner, but I think the finals could be as tough as they've gotten since the time they lost in Game 7 to the Cleveland Cavaliers. I really think it's a reverse situation for the Warriors this year. They'll get to the finals, but it's when the finals come that you're not going to get a finals like you got last year, Lo. That's how I shape it up. Not one is easier or hard,
understood.
But I do think it's a reversal for the Warriors this time. Instead of plodding through all those series, they're going to get through some series, and then they're going to have to plod through the finals.
Yeah, I don't think that the Western Conference is going to be as grind as it was last year. I too believe that, and I think the finals will be more of a grind, so I am with you on that. I do believe that, though, on the way, they're going to it's going to be more of a, I would say, a grind, a process, meaning they may lose to the Clippers because the Clippers are going to run them. I get it. The Clippers are young. They got long legs. Those guys can run up and down the court. They're going to push at a frantic pace. The Warriors guys are a little getting older. Yeah, they're a better team. So I think it's going to be vigorous on them.
I hope one of those series goes at least 6 or 7 because I think it recalibrates what the Warriors are doing. If they win the first one and one, or, you know, lose one, next one is a sweep, next one they lose one. They're going to waltz into the finals. You could say, yeah, they're going to be marching down there thinking we're on top of the world. I always think to recalibrate. If they get a 6-game series where they get pushed a little bit, recalibrates, refocuses.
I see I'm out on that.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with the logic.
Right.
I still to this day maintain that the biggest threat to the Warriors is injury.
Yeah.
I think injury poses a bigger threat than anything else. I don't want additional games. I want get in, get out. I always go back to the thought of that year Derrick Rose wrecked his knee.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.